Today on Travel Transparent, we're going to hear from Nate Howell. On two separate occasions, Nate went to Afghanistan and was not a part of the war effort there. Nate went to train business leaders in Kabul with Morningstar Development, an NGO whose mission is, quote, to provide hope and opportunity to the people of Afghanistan using sustainable economic and community development initiatives that are designed to empower individuals and transform communities. Nate talks about various pieces to his experience, from the stark transformation in leaving Dubai International and landing in Kabul International, to the precautions he had to take in a war zone, and how it is easier to be an effect on real change in Kabul rather than the United States. Nate currently resides in Raleigh, North Carolina, and is at this point of the time of recording expecting his second daughter and lives with his wife there. Hope you enjoy it. I'll be back at the end to sign us off. All right, Nate. So we are doing this recording. You're in Durham, North Carolina, correct?
Yeah, that's right. Downtown Durham, baby.
Wait, and tell me. So I want to hear about this before we get started. What the heck is a Google incubator?
Yeah, so I'm actually in this like tech space that has probably close to 100 technology companies in it. So think about a big building downtown with a bunch of technology companies in it with shared spaces like call rooms and coffee corners. And there's this like a slide that goes down to the basement floor and there sleep and you can take a shower here. And it's just the cool, there's some Razor scooters you can cruise around on. So that's where our US base is. So we're not actually in the incubator anymore, but we're still in the same building on the ground floor.
Dude, they just don't want you to leave.
Right, man.
So, all right, so let's talk about leaving. Correct me if I'm wrong. So, as I said in the introduction, Nate went to Afghanistan 2012, Nate?
Is that, yeah, 2012, six months into marriage.
I couldn't remember if it was before marriage or after.
I went two times. So the first time I went was in 2011.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then did your wife, Kara, go with you the second time?
Yes, she did.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So
second time around, I took my wife back.
So was she, we could get into this later in the show, but I'm curious, was she as jazzed about going as you were the first time?
I think she was pretty jazzed about going, but there are certain elements of fear. I mean, it's a pretty dangerous place. It definitely got us both outside of our comfort zone, and she had never been. So she was just really kind of depending on me to, in some ways, make a good decision for the both of us, having not been there.
Yeah. What do you think? Well, we can get into a little bit. How'd you end up going there in 2011 in the first place? Like, who put the idea in your head? You know, I mean, 2011, right? I'm trying to think. The war really, I feel like it's been stagnant for 6 years. But, all right. But yeah, how'd you get into the idea of, I'm going to go to Afghanistan?
Yeah, good question. So it had not been on my radar. There are some good friends of mine, actually, that had been to Afghanistan before and had been helping a nonprofit there, an NGO called Morningstar Development, that really just focuses on like different health initiatives, education initiatives, medical initiatives, agricultural initiatives throughout the country of Afghanistan, and actually has been there for over 20 years now. And so a good friend of mine, Rob, as well as another guy you may know, Phil Carnuccio. We're friends with the founder of this organization. His name's Daniel Batchelder. And so they'd both been before, and we're going on sort of this vision trip, taking some leaders over to Afghanistan to just look at what Morningstar was accomplishing there. And I think it would probably included some donors and just people that were invested in the country for whatever reason. And so I was invited on this trip, and I decided to go. It intrigued me. It piqued my interest. I'd seen Daniel Batchelder, the founder of Morningstar, speak at an event, and what he was doing there really kind of tugged on the strings of my heart. And so may have been a bit crazy, but I decided to go on this 2-week trip to see what was going on in Afghanistan.
All right. So the first time you went for 2 weeks, who approached you? Was it Rob that approached you? Phil, who came up to you, and how they break the news to you? Did they say something along the lines of, "Hey, I got something to talk to you about," or did they just say, "You want to go to Afghanistan with me?"
I think it was Rob who initially asked me about going, and yeah, I mean, there was definitely a spiritual aspect to this trip as well. So I was a part of a church that, actually two different churches. One was Providence. One was a home church called Meeting House Ministries that were led by Phil Carnuccio and Rob Holman. And they were both invested into Morningstar as a way to spread love to the people of Afghanistan through practical means, practical measures. And so the trip was partially vision, and the trip was also just to hold a sort of refreshing retreat for the workers of Morningstar.
Yeah, they kind of, because I'm guessing it's, from what I've gathered,
it's a faith-based organization.
Okay, but from what I gather, like, when someone's embedded like that for a long time, it's easy to become really weary.
Exactly. So you have a lot of, you can just picture a lot of Westerners and folks from first world countries that have lived in this war-torn country and are really serving the least of these in a lot of ways. Just really broken people, really horrific situations and life circumstances. And it's scary. It's a scary place. There's a lot of tension. There's a lot of anxiety. There's a lot of death, uncertainty. There have been decades of war. So because of that, some of the workers just needed respite. And so we went with the goal in mind of just blessing them and being resources to them any way we could. And we actually were able to sort of hold a retreat for them. And so I was invited to help host that retreat, and Rob had approached me to see if I wanted to be a part of it. And so,
what were your when he approached you? What flooded your mind at that moment, if you could remember?
I would say excitement and fear, because you know me. I mean, I've been to many different countries, and I definitely am very passionate about the world and different cultures and different places. But I think one of the things that stood out to me, like I mentioned earlier, I had seen Daniel Batchelder speak, who is the founder of Morningstar, at least once or twice. And what he described in Afghanistan, just the work going on there and the people and the progress that they were making, it really intrigued me. And so there was a lot of excitement in the idea of actually showing up and seeing what's going on and being a resource. I think what gripped me in terms of fear was just the reality that there's a war going on there. It seemed like constant media bombardment in terms of people dying, suicide bombers, instability, yeah. Taliban.
I know, so just, go ahead, sorry. I know we just there was just a lot of uncertainty, and did you think you were going to be a victim in some ways?
I didn't know. It's the first time I'd ever been to a country like that before, and so there was just a lot of uncertainty there.
It's interesting. I know we just got done, you know, like Bo Bergdahl was just, right? He was just released, essentially. And he was did you know anything about him at the time that there was this American Like,
I didn't, but I had heard other stories of folks who had been captured by the Taliban or even killed. And so there were certainly a fair share of stories I had seen or heard.
Yeah, I remember when you went back, I said, I don't know if it was your first time or second time, I said something along the lines of, I don't know if you remember this, but I said something along the lines like, Nate, you sure you want to do this? And you were pretty serious. And I think I was more impressed, maybe because I had known you, I wasn't too surprised, but I was, you know, your wife at the time was like, well, we'll be okay. Like, she was pretty convinced that what you guys were supposed to do. Did anyone else say anything that was discouraging, or did anyone else, you know, try and convince you not to go?
Oh yeah, absolutely. We had plenty of family members and well-meaning friends who were very against us going. And everyone had an opinion. And so it was definitely a decision that my wife and I made with its own set of challenges. And some of those were financial and logistic related in terms of getting visas and the operations involved to pull it off. But I would say the bigger difficulty was the relational aspect, where we did have a lot of people saying, hey, like, we think you're being foolish, or we don't think this is a good idea, or what are you doing? And especially being a newly married couple, I certainly received a fair amount of kickback from people, blowback from people, taking my bride. Like, what are you doing taking your bride to Afghanistan? You must be crazy. And so, yeah, definitely had a fair share of that, to be sure.
Yeah, you know, I heard something the other day that someone said, well, should you take your kids to environments like that if you, you know, feel called to serve a certain group? And the answer, I guess, someone said was, well, this is ultimately what's best for them. Did you feel like that when people would tell you, oh, you shouldn't go? Like, did you feel like, well, ultimately, if I'm looking out for our best interest, this is what I should be doing?
Well, I try to be very intentional in the way that I live, and maybe I'll spin it a different way. If someone asked me to go back to Afghanistan now, I wouldn't go.
Okay.
Because I believe that we all have different assignments in life, and that we're all called to steward different things in different seasons. And my wife and I felt very strongly about going to Afghanistan in that season. In a way, we felt like we were supposed to be there. We were supposed to go there. It was the right timing. The right doors were opening. We had a very high degree of peace about the move. And everything just lined up. And so we felt like we were actually being obedient to a specific seasonal calling on our lives. And through that, there was a lot of grace, and there was a lot of peace, and there was a lot of confidence in going there. Now, fast forward a few years, unrelated to the fact that I have a daughter, or that I have a second daughter on the way, or the fact that, you know, hopefully I'm a little older and wiser, I wouldn't go back to Afghanistan unless, once again, I felt like it was something that I was specifically supposed to do. Because I'm not one to take risks for the sake of taking risks. If I feel like there's something that I'm supposed to do, I think God's opening a door for me to walk through. Hopefully I'll be obedient and walk through it 100% of the time. And that's more, I would say at the time, that's what I felt like I was doing. We both felt like we were walking through a door that God opened, and so we felt like whether we died or not, we were being obedient to his call on our life in that season. We don't think that's our call right. We don't think that's our season right now. So in some ways, it's suicide just going back. And so I don't know if it directly answers your question, but I think
no, it does. Like, you know, one thing I want people to, especially listeners, to know is, there's a time to travel. Even though this show is about travel, I don't want it to be this, you have to go travel all the time to be happy. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, or to even to fulfill, like, to receive fulfillment. Like it should not be, and I love it. And sometimes I can run into that hurdle where I need to, but yeah. All right. So you went, I'm curious. I've heard that landing is different. When you land into Kabul, you have to be, because the mountains, like there's been two crashes, 2005, 2008, the mountains make it really tricky. Did you have, in your experience at least, did the plane land differently than all the other plane flights you've had in your life, or was it fairly atypical?
I would say it was fairly atypical, but what was very different, if you can imagine coming in over the Hindu Kush, so just some magnificent, beautiful mountains, untapped, beautiful natural resources as far as the eye can see, and then coming into this city where it's not like coming into Philadelphia or New York City. There are no skyscrapers. It's literally like a valley with mountains. It's surrounded by mountains. And there are these almost first century looking homes that are basically block shaped going all the way up the side of these mountains and colored, painted different colors. And then when you land, you're actually landing on the tarmac and getting out of the plane and walking into this third world airport. Just very, very, very different experience.
So, did it feel like you were going back in time?
Yeah, in some ways it did. It was just this bizarre mixture of like old world and new world. You had this huge NATO blimp that was hovering over the city.
And you came in from Dabul. And Nate, you came in from Dubai, right? Like your first stop is in Dubai.
Yeah, talk about night and day contrast. I mean, Dubai being a world-class, very modern city, some of the highest, most striking buildings in the world there. Huge concentration of wealth, huge concentration of all the latest and greatest art and architecture. And all that money can buy into this sort of war-torn city where much of the, you know, much of the scenery is very, very ancient looking in some ways. And then there's this blend of trucks that are army trucks and tanks and bases and first world bunch of people on cell phones and just a very, very interesting sort of hodgepodge of culture. And yeah, it was very, very, very different.
Was that hard for you to adjust to, or was there other things that were, you know, the typical stuff that people experience whenever they go to a foreign country? Language, different customs. You know, what you were dealing with was, I would imagine, just a very different way of living. But was that hard adjusting from, you know, Western conveniences? Or was it the other things that were hard to adjust to, you know, like worldview or, you know, differing religions, you know, like.
Yeah, was that it was very, very difficult transition. So one thing is just this sense of confinement, right? So you don't have your own car. You don't get out and walk around on the streets. Where we stayed was at a guest house that had a big wall around it and guards, and all the houses in that neighborhood also had big walls around them. There's just a huge lack of freedom. So especially for my wife, like just needing to sort of cover up. She didn't wear a burqa, but she definitely wore a veil and or head covering and just, you know, a really kind of big and baggy long dresses and fully covered. And we couldn't hold hands in public. There were just a lot of things that we weren't used to. And we felt in a lot of ways very oppressed just generally. So culturally speaking, there are a lot of cultural nuances and faux pas that we were aware of. And then just not being able to get out and be free, go on a walk or.
Yeah. Did you guys ever mess up on any of those faux pas? Were you broke an unwritten rule?
I'm sure we did, but I would say that overall people were pretty gracious to foreigners. So in Kabul and other Asian places, so Kabul is actually, Afghanistan's actually Central Asia. So it's a very Asian culture. It's very much honor and shame based. It's very different than the Western mentality, which is very independent. So there's sure. There's a lot that goes into weddings and funerals and family, and it's very tribal. People are very communal. So I would say, though, overall, people were pretty gracious, and I'm sure we made mistakes every day.
Cool. You went a second time, correct, to do business development, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I read a couple statistics. The Atlantic had an interesting report. They said, first off, that there was this issue of capital flight where it was hard to develop business leaders because as soon as they developed any skills, they would leave. Or, they were unwilling to invest in their own country because some NGO would come along and build a road for them.
Right.
And then the other hurdle was that I think 7 out of 10 men were under 25 in the country. So yeah. Really young population. Did you encounter any of those hurdles when you were trying to, teach entrepreneurship, teach business development? And, just for background, some people might not know, Nate, you went to Pepperdine in California. You graduated BA, right? And then
BS,
and then you've helped start a lot of businesses. You've taken businesses that, haven't been doing so well and brought them up to speed where they are successful. So, you have a lot of experience training people to be entrepreneurs. Like, was that different in Afghanistan? Were those challenges present, or were there the same challenges that are present here in the United States?
A couple things. One of the things that we really take for granted here is freedom. The ability to kind of create your own wave, if you will, create your own momentum, the American dream. Most of that's not really possible there. A lot of your success is predicated on what family you're from, what resources are available to you, and most of that is based on your tribe and your rank and your family. The other thing, though, is it's a very corrupt country. Afghanistan is one of the most corrupt, or at least at the time was one of the most corrupt countries in the world. And the third thing is, and I think the average age statistic that you pointed out points to this, but they've had decades and decades and decades of war.
Yeah,
so there's just been an incredible amount of stability, which I think can all be summarized in hopelessness.
Yeah.
So maybe I'm the person who has a brilliant entrepreneurial mind, but I don't have the resources. Or maybe I'm the person that in the past had a successful business, but it was taken from the government because of corrupt, the government's corrupt. Or maybe I spent my life building bridges and they all got blown up in the war. So
right.
I think because of that, you have folks that don't necessarily have a vision for the future. They're very much in survival mode, which ultimately I think can be underscored with hopelessness.
Gotcha.
And so definitely had some of the entrepreneurial spirits out there who were making a difference, but most folks just didn't have the vision or the resources or maybe the hope to try to make things happen. And so that was actually a big part of the initiative of Morningstar. One of the things that we were doing in Morningstar was establishing these ILDs, Institute for Leadership Developments, next to the major universities throughout Afghanistan, and just teaching leadership to and servant-based, Western-based leadership to these leaders, whether it be religious, political, or business leaders in their own environment, in their own context. And we definitely saw a lot of fruit coming from that. But
What do you guys see? Like, is there someone that was really successful that you think back on and you think, hey, it worked? or?
Yeah, absolutely. So one guy that comes to mind, his name's RF. And so he actually created his own spinoff organization called Afghans for Progressive Thinking. Really sharp guy, just an amazing mind, and really had a lot of influence in his country, and started this organization to bring some of the nation's greatest thinkers and university grads together to really do debates about like women's rights or
interesting
these sort of taboo issues that most people don't talk about in a place like Afghanistan. And in a way, I saw it as a way to use discussion and critical thinking to start unlocking the minds of these young Afghanistan girls and guys who have just assumed things are a certain way. And so I've seen him go on to succeed. I think he got a scholarship to come to one of the foremost universities here in the States. I recently saw him in a picture with John Kerry and some other folks in the U.S. government. He's just been someone who's been a rising star in Afghanistan. A lot of the people who have gone through the Morningstar Leadership Development courses are now in government positions, are in top business positions in the country. And so,
sorry, man. Someone, I don't know why someone just keeps deciding to call. This is a good lesson. Make sure your phone is off.
No worries, it happens. So yeah, I mean, the stories go on and on there, but a big part of changing that country is really creating environments where people can flourish and where they can learn and where they can see life through a different lens, which is a huge task, but it's happening.
Yeah. When you got back, so it sounds like, you know, there was definitely some pieces that were successful. When you got back, were you, I've always heard this too, that when people go to these countries that come back and feel like people aren't doing enough. Were you angry when you got back? Like, did you feel like you need to be reintroduced to your home?
It made me feel like I wanted to kiss the ground.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is usually you don't realize what you have until you don't have it. So sure. I know we have our own problems and we are not perfect as a nation. Despite all that, though, it just made me incredibly thankful for what we do have. And it's not just the freedom. A lot of it's basic stuff that we don't think about, like working roadways and efficiency and rights. And so, yeah, it was actually like a great homecoming for me. Shortly after, unfortunately, some friends that we worked pretty closely with were shot and killed. So that was pretty eye-opening for us, and just once again underscored for us the importance to make sure that, like, we are, yeah, we're not taking life for granted. And I think that when you go into a place like Afghanistan, you just see how fragile life actually is.
Yeah.
We were able to unfortunately experience that up close and personal. But we were really, really thankful when we came home. And I think it's given us a much greater appreciation for what we have here. I would say one thing that was a striking contrast was there's just such a big need there. It's like you could go to a country like Afghanistan, and I'm sure a dozen or more other countries that are out there, and there's just such a huge need for anything and everything you can think of. So any skill set that you have, or even just general generosity or kindness or courtesy, like there's just such a huge need there. And so coming back to America, in some ways you kind of ask yourself these questions of, you know, what are my goals and where can I make the biggest splash, the biggest impact with my life? Like,
what do I need to buy? You know,
but even beyond that, it's like, how do I make a difference here? Well, there, it's just no question. There are just so many needs. You can spend every single waking hour of the day just
making a difference,
which I think that was an adjustment for us coming back here. there's just such a cry for any way that anyone can help. And one thing I was really shocked about was the caliber of people that I met in Afghanistan. I mean, I met some of the coolest, most talented, most big-hearted people ever, and just super concentrated in Kabul, literally from all over the world, from Brazil, from the UK, from South Africa, from the United States. And it was just really neat to see people kind of living above maybe what we would call the safe route, right? Like,
yeah, sure.
The safe route. And really kind of laying down their lives in a lot of ways to serve this nation that needs so much help. And so I think coming back to America, there's definitely that question of, am I making as big of a difference here as I was there?
Yeah.
But it was definitely a homecoming for us, a happy home.
I remember you said, I think you said something along the lines like, I was just happy to see green too.
Yeah.
And so that's a really good contrast. Well, dude, we can continue this conversation, I know, a long time. There's so much to cover. But I'm running out of time. But I do want to ask you a couple. I always try to ask my guests a couple either-or questions before I let you go. Is that cool?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so these are – first off, I'm going to – I'll link everything, what I've talked about, like the Atlantic article, Morningstar. I'll link that in the show notes so everyone can check those out. But – all right, Nate, either ors, first off, really cool. All right. So think about these next questions, just vacation. All right. Nothing serious. Would you rather go somewhere where you can live in luxury or where you can be a bum and not shave or shower for a week and no one's going to care?
Man, I kind of want to say both.
Well, it's either or, dude.
I would probably live in luxury, but to be honest, I'd probably be a bit of a bum.
Yeah, I could see that. all right, would you rather deal with a screaming baby on the plane or someone putting their bare feet next to you?
Oh, bare feet.
Now, you've lived in both these places. Would you rather go somewhere where you could just enjoy the mountains or go somewhere where we can just enjoy the ocean?
I'm more of an ocean guy.
Okay. That surprises me a little bit. All right. This one, I don't know if you experienced the first one. Clearly the second one. If you were stuck somewhere, would you rather deal with a natural catastrophe or a political catastrophe? Does that make sense? Like, if you were stuck somewhere, would you rather deal with, like, a political uprising or, a volcano eruption?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say because, on one side of, on one hand, you get a tsunami that wipes me out, worst case scenario. On the other side, I would say probably a political.
Yeah, that's what most guests are saying so far. And then lastly, this is a good either or. Would you rather go somewhere with good people or good scenery?
People.
Cool. Not surprised on that one, Nate. Well, dude, this is, like I said, it's been fun. Maybe we could do a part two at some point. Really appreciate the time. And, I think that point about, I can feel really jaded about making a difference here. It seems so hard. There's so much money that's involved. And, I thought it was a really good point. Just say, hey, you can make a difference really easily somewhere else. And hopefully, this encourages myself or others to get out there and do it. So, thanks, buddy.
That's a good point. Yeah. Thanks, Dave. I appreciate it. Yeah. And, looking forward to listening to more of your shows.
that wraps up Travel Transparent episode number 2. If you've ever thought about traveling for humanitarian reasons, I hope this episode encourages and inspires you to pursue it all the more. Thanks for tuning in. This is your host, David Giuliano, signing off. I'll see you next time on Travel Transparent.